Matthew 5:14 through 16. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. I wonder what shine your light means.
Winter retreat's going to be so much fun.
Can't wait.
Oh, hey, Maddie.
Hi.
Are you coming to winter retreat with us this weekend? It's going to be so much fun. We're going to play in the snow.
We're going to be surrounded by Christ followers, and we're going to get to learn what shining our light means.
Of course I'm going. I'm really looking forward to learning to shine my light for Jesus.
What's up, Maddie? Are you going to go to the big party this weekend? There's not going to be no parents there, and we're going to have so much fun.
Of course I'm going. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, because, you know, Brad's going to be there. This party's about to be so lit.
Wait a second. I thought you were going to winter retreat with us. It's going to be so much fun.
Of course I'm going to.
What is winter retreat?
How fun would that be?
You're going where?
Why would you go to a party that doesn't honor God?
Of course.
Maddie, the time has come for you to choose. Are you going to choose to be a beacon for others, or are you going to choose to dwell in the darkness?
I can't choose.
You just did.
Good morning, church. It is a wonderful day to be with you all. I'm Paige.
I'm Benson, and these are our readers, Peyton and Caleb.
And we will be sharing what we learned from our first session with Ryan Payne at Winter Retreat today.
Let's read our theme verse of this past weekend, Matthew 5, 14 through 16.
You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven.
What is meant by light? We hear about it all the time and see it all the time. Whether it's the sun shining in the waking hours of the day or the kitchen light that's on at night for that sneaky snack. Either way, we need it all the time. Diving deeper into the meaning of light, it's used in both symbolic and literal meanings. In a symbolic aspect, it represents God's presence, truth, and salvation. Not only that, but Jesus himself identifies as light in John 8:12.
Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life.
Light does many things in our lives. It cuts through darkness, helps us see the truth, and offers us warning. Did you guys see something?
No. Nope.
Thought something bright was back there. Anyways.
Light also offers us hope when we're hopeless. It is used in healing when we're hurt and lets us see ideas that we don't often see.
God reveals himself to the rest of the world through his followers. His light cuts through the darkness of the enemy's lies and helps us see things clearly. Here are the three things we clearly need based on this teaching in Matthew 5.
Commitment to Christ, commitment to community, and commitment to character. Again, for your notes.
Commitment to Christ, commitment to community, and commitment to character.
First, of course, is Christ. We see Christ all throughout this verse because he is the light shining through us.
When the moon shines at night, sometimes so powerful we don't even need streetlights to see, it's not shining its own light, but the sun's. That's how it is when we share God's light. It's truly not our own, but of God. Not only that, but it's very important to God that we do share that light. Here's Mark 4, verses 21 and 22.
And he said to them, is a lamp brought in to be put under a basket or under a bed and not on a stand? For nothing is hidden except to be made manifest, nor is anything secret except to come to light.
This is why Christ is at the top of our list. He provided us with everything that we needed to be the lights for the kingdom.
Not only did God give us the light to shine, but he gave us the city. He gave us the community. He set us on top of that hill, on top of that lampstand. Here are some more verses about why we need the community God has given us.
Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another, which is Proverbs 27:17. And for where two or three are gathered in my name, For where two or three are gathered in my name, there am I among them, which is Matthew 18:20.
If community is so important to God, it should also be important to us. For we truly can't shine in a community without the lights of others. Now for our last point, we have character. The light shining through us from Christ can only really shine through if our fruits exemplify it.
But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, fruitfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law.
Together we can grow our character to become better, stronger, and brighter. God didn't give us this light to be buried by loneliness and fruitlessness. In your notes, if you're taking them, which of course you should.
We need to steward the light God's given us by committing ourselves to Christ, community, and character for the good of his kingdom. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Abby, and this is Allie. She's going to be reading scripture for us. And I have a question for you all to start. Who are you? If you would turn to some people beside you and tell them three things about yourself, please. Oftentimes, whenever we introduce ourselves, we tell people things about us, such as our job, whether or not we're married, the sports and activities that we're involved in, and we make these things a big part of who we are, our identity. And the truth is that your identity drives everything that you do, the way that you act, the way that you talk, the way that you think. All of those things are founded in your identity. So again, who are you? Let's see what Jesus had to say about identity in Mark 12:13-17.
And they sent him some of the Pharisees and some of the Herodians to trap him in his talk. And they came and said to him, "Teacher, we know that you are true and do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances, but truly teach the way of God. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Should we pay them or should we not?" But knowing their hypocrisy, he said to them, "Why put me to the test? Bring me a denarius and let me look at it." And they brought one, and he said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" They said to him, "Caesar's." Jesus said to them, "Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And they marveled at him.
For a little background here, in the time that this interaction takes place, Rome had been occupying Israel. And so you had two groups of religious leaders that are mentioned in this, the Pharisees and the Herodians. The Pharisees, on one hand, they didn't agree with anything that Rome wanted to do. They wanted to fight against it. They wanted to push back. And then you have the Herodians who were like, "Oh, we can go with the flow. We can be okay with this, and we'll operate underneath that. We won't push back." And so these two groups did not get along. They hated each other. But they were united in the fact that they hated Jesus more than they hated each other. And so they wanted to attack him. They wanted to trap him in his words. And so when they brought this question to him, Jesus knew immediately that they were trying to trap him in what they wanted, in what they were asking. Because if he were to say, "No, don't pay the taxes," he would be siding with the Pharisees. If he were to say, "Yes, do pay the taxes," he would be siding with the Herodians. And so he answers this question in a way that's unique, that he asks them to bring him a denarius, which I think we have a picture of that. That's what a denarius looks like. And he asks them, whose image is upon this coin? And to which they answered, Caesar, who was ruling Rome at the time. And the significance of this is that he told them, give to Caesar what is Caesar's. And this money obviously belongs to Caesar because his image is imprinted upon it. So he says, again, give to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. And if we read verse 17 again.
Jesus said to them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. And they marveled at him.
They marveled at him. Now, why is that? Why did they think that this was so important that he said to God what is God's? Well, he goes back to Genesis. In our creation as humanity, where we are made in God's image, Genesis 1, 26 through 27.
Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
So the point in me bringing up this account isn't to talk about taxes. I'm 16. What do I know about taxes? The point here is to talk about identity, that each and every one of us is made with God's image upon us. And the Pharisees knew that, and that's why they marveled at him. They knew that that's what he was referencing. So you are made in the image of God, and you are valuable because of this. It's not something that you get to choose. You get to choose your job. I mean, high schoolers, how many times are we asked, what are you going to do after high school? Are you going to go to college? Are you going to go in the trades? I mean, we have these big decisions to make. Are you going to, we get the choice of who you get to marry, who you get to spend the rest of your life with. You have the choice of what sports and activities you're going to be involved in. I mean, if you talk to my dad, he would tell you all about his pickleball career. That's a choice to be a part of that. But you don't get to choose whether or not you're made in the image of God. You do get to choose your response to that. Is it something that you're going to embrace and allow it to be a part of your identity? Is it going to be something that is the foundation of who you are? Or are you going to choose to take that light that God has given you and put it in a box, seal it tight, shove it under your bed for nobody else to see? That's your choice in this. Choosing your identity to be in Christ, not in the things of this world, transforms you. The things of this world will fade, they don't last, but that which is from God will be eternal. When you choose to put your identity in Christ, it guides the way that you act, the way that you speak, and the way that you think. So again, our theme verse for this past weekend was Matthew 5, 14 through 16.
You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, put on a stand, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven.
When the light is put on the stand in the house, it shines to everybody who is around it. It guides people home. How many times do we talk about how lights are symbolic, how lights are the guiding thing? So my encouragement to you is to let that light shine. Place your identity in Christ. Be a beacon for others. God can use you by shining his light to guide somebody else out of darkness. Every one of you is here because somebody else had Christ in them first, and they shared that with you. Is that something that you want to keep to yourself, or is that something that you want to share? So let your light shine. Let people see God in you. So for the third and final time, who are you? Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lydia, and my readers are Kalia and Bryce, and I will be talking about our sermon from session 3 of Winter Retreat. In this sermon, Ryan takes a deep dive into commitment to character. The first thing we talked about is that who you are is more important than what you do. Even if we do all these amazing things and help others, but don't do them for the glory of God, instead do them for ourselves to make us feel good, then why are we doing them? What we have on the inside steers what we do on the outside. The most important thing is that our actions glorify God. When we do that, people will notice something different about us. If we stand out from the other people at our job or at school, then people will notice. By being different, we can shine a light upon others and be a beacon, just by showing how a Christian lives. This could also open the door for someone to ask why you are different, and then you could tell them about God. Just like we stand out when our actions glorify God, our light can dim when we start to follow the customs of culture and begin to blend in. Just like when you put a single flashlight in a whole bunch, you don't stand out anymore. Now, we all know the story of Joseph and how he saved the Egyptians from starvation and was faithful to God through all his trials and hardships. But we don't often focus on the beginning of his walk with God. Please listen as Genesis 37, 1 through 17 is read.
Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, in the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain in the field, when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream, and this time the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them." "Very well," he replied. So he said to him, "Go and see if it all is well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me." Then he sent him off from the valley of Hebron. When Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the fields and asked him, "What are you looking for?" He replied, "I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they are grazing their flocks?" "They have moved on from here," the man answered. "I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan.
Okay. After reading that passage, what are some of the ways we could describe Joseph as? Some of the ways we could describe Joseph as are a tattletale, a bragger, an instigator, he's inconsiderate, he's very lazy, and he's the favorite, and he shows it to all his brothers, and he is very immature. All of us have areas in our lives that we need God's help to fix. Romans 3:23 says, "All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." None of us are perfect and have got everything figured out. Now back to Joseph. Even though he wasn't the best in the beginning, Joseph did not stay like this. Joseph was not born ready to be a leader. In order for him to become more mature, he had to go through several hard times and trust in God through them. We are told to grow up in our salvation. 1 Peter 2:2-3.
Like newborn infants, long for the pure spiritual milk, that by it you may grow up into salvation. If indeed you have tasted that the Lord is good. 1 Peter 2:2-3.
When the story of Joseph started, He was 17. He was 30 when he began to serve Pharaoh. That means that there were 13 years in order for Joseph to grow up in salvation and become ready to lead an empire. Throughout that time, Joseph was faithful to God and grew in character. Later in the story, when Joseph's brothers arrived in Egypt to buy grain, and they found out that Joseph was second in command, they were afraid of him because they thought that what he did or what they did to him a decade earlier, he was going to punish them for it because now he had the power to do that. But Joseph didn't. He forgave them. He could now see that what they did to him was just part of God's plan. Eventually, he could see that his suffering had a purpose to it. God will use difficult times to further our faith. When we go through our storms and bends on the road of life, God will be there to help us get through and make us better on the other side. It's okay to acknowledge that things are hard. Everyone goes through hard times, and we need to support people who we know are going through those things and help them keep them trusting in God. If we are faithful through our suffering, God will make us better on the other side of it. Romans 5:3-5 says,
"Not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. And endurance produces character, character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us." Romans 5:3-5.
God is with you in your struggles, and he will bring good out of them. Romans 8:28 says,
"And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, and those who are called according to his purpose." Romans 8:28.
You will experience suffering and problems whether you follow God or not. When we follow God, our hard times will not be wasted. There will be a purpose for them. I hope that as you go into your next storm, you stay faithful to God through it, and you see that on the other side, you are able to be a better beacon of your faith.
Good morning. Many of you may know me, but my name's Katie. Jenny asked me if I would be willing to share my testimony, so here I am. For a long time, I've struggled with my faith. You know, I've been one of those lukewarm, on-the-fence kind of Christians, and we know that God doesn't want a fence rider. He wants somebody who, you know, is committed. Well, these past few months, I've had a lot happen. Towards the middle of December, my mom kicked me out, and I had to move out pretty quickly. And I was very lucky to have such loving family and friends who are willing to come and help me. But it's really changed my perspective on a lot of things. It feels like now that I'm out of that house, my eyes are finally open. When I was living there, everything was dark and depressing and so far from God, and it felt like there was this weight that followed me everywhere that I went, even when I was at my dad's, and I couldn't see the light around me. But now that I'm not there, it's like I see God working in ways I never imagined. And I never imagined my eyes would be opened like this. I didn't think that this was something that God would be working through. But like Lydia just said, you know, God works through our struggles, and our struggles don't go to waste when we follow God. At Winter Retreat, Ryan talked a lot about our commitment to Christ, commitment to community, and our commitment to character. I found such joy in my new commitment to Christ, and I'm so excited to get to grow with this community that I'm committed to, with all of you here in the congregation and in youth, and those of you who are online. And I'm nervous, but I'm excited to be committed to this new character that I'm growing in with God and with you alongside me, and I'm so excited to commit to my faith journey with all of you there.
Hey, church. So my name is Cooper, and this is Michael, and that's Megan. These are my two readers. So we went to Winter Retreat, and one of our very own Taylor Lockhart, she gave us our breakout session on the difference between the cultural light and the biblical light. So first, we need to understand what those two even are. So in Ephesians 5:9, which Megan's going to read for us.
For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light is found in all that is good and right and true.
So in verse 9, you can see the biblical light. It says, for the fruit of the light consists in goodness, righteousness, and truth. So what is the big one there? It's truth. In John 8:12, for Michael to read.
Again, Jesus spoke to them, saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have light, the light of life.
So Jesus is the light of the world, and we're supposed to spread that light. So we're spreading Jesus, his light. What's that even mean? Well, I'm going to tell you. It means that we need to show his love, his kindness, his mercy, all of that. All that, just out. All of it. So that's the biblical light. It's Jesus. Jesus is the biblical light. He is the light. But what about the cultural light? So in John 3:19, verses 20, which I'm going to read, it says, and this is the judgment. The light has come into the world, and the people have loved the darkness rather than the light because their works were evil. So this explains that the cultural light is where when we go into the darkness, we shed the light of truth. So cultural light, or rather its darkness, is just the complete opposite. Anything that is the complete opposite of Christ is what cultural light is. So Taylor used many analogies in this breakout session. One of them that really stood out to me, and to many others that were in there, was how the moon reflects the sun. If we are the moon and God's the sun, God pours his light into us, and we reflect it out and show it to others. But we need to make sure where we get our light, because I was told by a lot, especially my family, you need to be that light, a good representation of the light, because if you're the only light someone sees, then that's going to be their impression. So you need to really be careful where you're getting your light. Are you getting it from people who aren't as trustworthy or brand new to the faith? Or are you getting it from someone who's experienced, who's been there time and time again, and knows what to do? Another analogy that Taylor used was blue tissue paper. Whenever you put tissue paper in front of a flashlight, it shines the light blue instead, and same with every other color. So if you put blue tissue paper over you, if you're the light of Christ, it's going to show a different color. Do we want to be the true, accurate representation of Christ, or do we just want to be a different shade and show what's comfortable for other people? One of the other things Taylor talked about was an accountability person. Accountability person. To tell us when we're straying away and how we don't need to be, and how they don't need to be on the same level of faith, but they still need to have the same values as you, so they don't let you stray away or they let things slide. And the last thing that she talked about us in correspondence with that was our friend circles. You need to make sure that the people you have in your inner circle, so here's you, this is your outer, this is you, all right? This is your outer circle, inner circle. This is your outer circle. You need to bring people who are maybe being like, just mean to you and bringing you down, that you need to move them out. Out to the outer circle. People who are probably trying to pour into you, like maybe you have relatives or family who go to church but are on your outer circle. You need to bring them in. Talk to them more. Bring them in. And you need to just make sure you get the people who are going to be a good influence, a good light to pour into you. Just have them close to you. So as the worship team comes up, I have a few questions. Who is in my inner circle that needs to be moved out? Or who's in my inner circle, or who's in my outer circle, who needs to be moved in? 2, do you have someone or something that is dimming your light? And 3, what can I change to reflect him in my daily life?